Another Madden Monday podcast on Trib Live here at Breakfast with Benz. Tim Benz along with you. Mark Madden, of course, joins us every Monday. And Mark will be on vacation, actually, coming up later this week. I'll be in for Mark a few times later on this week. You can read him four times a week here at Trib Live and listen to him on 105.9 The X. Mark, by the time you get back from your vacation, will the Pirates still be above 500?
That's iffy, Tim. They better start hitting. They got Colorado in town for three games. They're not too good. They better take at least two of those three. You know, they're 20-15. If you had been told they would be five games over 500 in early May, if you had been offered that before the season started, you'd have taken it, I'd have taken it, they'd have taken it. But boy, they're not hitting. They hit 182 over this seven-game losing streak. They're making mental errors, base-running errors, actual errors. And they fall apart sometimes now. They've had some stretches in games where it goes from bad to worse so quickly, it's reminiscent of last year. Mitch Keller throws Monday night against Colorado. He's supposed to be the potential ace, so he needs to show up and be the stopper and stop the losing streak. What's really a shame, Tim, is they drew pretty good crowds over the weekend at PNC, only to see Toronto win all three of those games.
As you pointed out, Colorado has a lousy record, but they're playing pretty well of late. I think they've won 6 of 7. They actually helped the Pirates out a bunch by beating up on Milwaukee, so Milwaukee couldn't catch them in the standings while the Pirates made
going
through this
losing. Yeah, but Tim, I refuse to look at the standings in May.
No, I know.
For the Pirates. It just doesn't count yet.
No, I get that. I'm just pointing out that, you know, not only from the standpoint of them playing all these AL East teams, because the next team in town is Baltimore, and they're off to a good start too. You know, a lot of skeptics out there were pointing to the opponent strength of schedule for the Pirates and seeing how weak it was. They're not doing themselves any favors by playing good teams in the AL East and getting steamrolled in terms of perception.
Yeah, but they beat Boston three straight, and Boston's a decent team anyway. They won two out of three against Los Angeles. I mean, it's not like they've only beaten bad teams, but Colorado is a bad team. As you mentioned, they've played better lately, but they're still, you know, well under 500. It's a team the Pirates got to beat.
They better, and I think there's reason for, after the last 30 years, skepticism. I mean, for a fan base where a good portion of it can't remember the last division title or World Series, you can't really blame them for forgetting one good month to start in April if things go awry this badly in May.
Well, yeah, but they're leaning a little heavy on this seven-game losing streak. Like, booing Austin Hedges Saturday, like, he's the cause of everything. He's like Matt Canada in shin guards, Tim. You know, that you take somebody who's really inconsequential. I mean, Hedges even more so than Canada, and place the blame on him because he's not somebody you quote-unquote like. I've been saying, even as the fans overreacted to the good start, this team's been so bad so long for the most part that the fans don't know how to react when the team does good and then when it does bad after.
I think the injuries are catching up to them as well, Mark. Not just because Troy is out, not just because O'Neill Cruz is out. That certainly hurts their lineup, but Castro's been having trouble at shortstop. I wasn't foreseeing that part of the equation, but it's been there.
Well, yeah, and you're not going to lose O'Neill Cruz and have it not hurt you indefinitely. In fact, it took longer to hurt them than I thought it would.
You talked about them melting down some, and we saw that in Tampa, certainly, with how the umpires were not on their side. It was poor umpiring, I'll say that, but I do think it allowed that umpiring got in their head some. And then we've seen it at times in the Toronto series, like, for instance, Sunday afternoon's game, where bad innings went to worse, and when they didn't plate runs in the bottom of, say, the seventh or eighth inning, Toronto, you just felt them pick up the momentum and score more runs, and they ended up walking away with the thing.
Happened again today, Tim. It was 5-1 Toronto, but the Pirates loaded the bases. Toronto got out of the inning. It was still 5-1. Before you know it, it's 10-1.
Leaving guys on base, they've been bad with runners in scoring position. Even Shelton admitted that a lot of the things that were going right in April just aren't in May. We will have ebbs and flows, but it's time for them to start flowing some runs right now. And what better time than the present with the Rockies coming in?
Well, forget ebb and flow, Tim. They got a lot of guys who aren't very good. And that got Austin the shuffle with a good start, but they have a lot of guys who aren't very good.
You feeling any better about the second round of the NHL playoffs than you were the first?
Well, Tim, as we record this, I'm watching Florida and Toronto tied 2-2 late in the third. I'd feel a lot better about it if Florida got up 3-0, because I think Toronto going splat will just be hilarious. That said, I still would rather see a game in Toronto. Like, if I have my druthers, I wanted to go to game 5 with Florida up 3-1 so we could see the crowd just, you know, go medieval, as I'm fond of saying, light fires in the stands. Just go deathly silent at the first sign of trouble. You know, it's a weird playoff because there's only one elite goalie left, and that's Ottinger from Dallas, although Bobrovsky's playing elite. I mean, Toronto's down to, like, some guy I never heard of. Carolina's down to their third stringer. It really is a war of tradition, not least in net. I like the Hughes brothers, man. They got charisma. After the game last night between Edmonton and Vegas, McDavid did an interview afterward on TNT, and he was just such a sourpuss. He wasn't like a dink, but he just, like, he's so dry. He's drier than the Sahara. Whereas the Hughes brothers, they're kids, and they came on for the postgame interview today, and they didn't act immature, but they kind of acted like kids. And, you know, I know Newark's not really New York, but having them in that market, if they can be as good as they look like they can be and just maintain that charisma and be interesting, that could go a long way for the league. I'm sure it won't.
When it comes to McDavid, I know what you're talking about. Like, Sidney Crosby has tried really hard to not be particularly interesting because he doesn't want to be controversial, but he's managed to do that and still have somewhat of a personality. McDavid's almost like, I don't want you to know my personality. He comes off as off-putting, quite honestly.
Well, like, Sid smiles and laughs and does his best to pretend he's into it. Heck, he probably does it when he talks to me, Tim. Whereas McDavid just, I mean, you know, he tries to be funny, he's not, and you just can't get away from the feeling he'd rather not be doing it.
That's right. The burdensome, the visual burdensome aspect of it is quite tangible in that regard.
Tim, the way he talks, I mean, which is to say wholly uninteresting, it doesn't matter whether he talks or not. He might as well not.
And if he talks, sometimes it comes off negative. I've had that impression the few times that I've interviewed McDavid. I'm like, I'm just not wild about going and talking to this guy, and I should be. He's the best player in the sport by a country mile.
Yeah, but he's better than Gretzky. Gretzky's not only making sporadic appearances on TNT, and it's still too often, Tim. He is so bland, you forget he's Wayne Gretzky.
I know you weren't the biggest Leon Draisaitl fan. How have you felt about his performance in the playoffs so far? Is that turned?
I don't know if I've not been the biggest fan. I just thought he was great because he operated in the shadows. Mm-hmm. But now he's put McDavid in his shadow, however temporarily. So I think he's been just magnificent.
You are, I know, a fan of how Tkachuk is playing with Florida, right?
Yeah, he's my Conn Smythe winner right this second.
Is he sort of a Kevin Stevens type when Stevens was at the top of his game?
Actually, and I hope Artie doesn't hear this, he's Artie was even more of a bull in a china shop and was better at the net. Tkachuk has better skills, better hands.
I think it's fair. I think it's a fair comparison.
Yeah, Artie still wouldn't like it.
Mark Madden with us from 105.9 The X. Make sure you're listening to him Monday through Friday on The X. Read him 4 times a week at Trib Live. Anything else in the playoffs stand out to you, Mark? Like, for instance, if things do go sour and go sour in a big way for Toronto, is Dubas back in play or not?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I somehow think he might be using Pittsburgh as leverage to get more control and money up there, but I just don't know.
Are you hearing anything else in that front? Any other names emerging that we haven't previously talked about?
No. I do hear, and this is only somewhat peripherally related, I hear Quenneville wants to coach again. And, you know, isn't sure what process he has to go through to pursue that. You know, because his role in the Chicago cover-up with the sex scandal back in 2010 that became public in 2021. But then again, like, the most logical place for Q to go would be the Rangers, because, you know, he'd be the ideal guy for that team, which is close to winning and needs that experienced hand at having done so. But I hear they're not interested because of what the blowback would be and his uncertain status with the league. And all of that I just said applies to Stan Bowman, the GM, who you'd have to think would be on Pittsburgh's radar, but probably not. And by the way, Tim, I'm not advocating for those two guys, not by any means, because, you know, what they were involved with was just a real bad thing. But don't you think they should know what is going on? Don't you think there should be, like, due process for them with the league instead of an informal whispered suspension?
Well, that dovetails in with what you said about Quinville, which was use the phrase status with the league. Theoretically, I didn't think there was a status with the league question. I mean, theoretically, he just lost his job, right?
No, it's whispered, Tim, that you would have to go to the league before hiring either of those.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm talking about. It shouldn't be that. I mean, like, the way it all eventually panned out was that was supposed to be an organizational decision, right? And now I've never heard a status of Joe Quinville officially talked about by the league. So,
well, that's my point. Yes, it should be.
Exactly.
I'm pretty sure for there to be a blackball is illegal. But, you know, they did it to Kaepernick. So, you know, and that's why I wouldn't want to give Bowman either, because it wouldn't be worth the blowback.
We decide what we want to talk about when it's convenient, because everybody was screaming from the mountaintops that there was collusion in the Lamar Jackson thing, but nobody will say it about this situation.
Well, because of the rush to cancel. Like, you look at that poor dope, the Oakland A's broadcaster, Kiper.
Yeah.
You know, he stumbled over a word. A bad word came out. There was clearly no intent. There was an immediate apology, and he's still suspended. Because, again, the woke rush to cancels out common sense, too.
That's why I was such a big fan of the Bill Maher Cojones Awards, where he highlighted four or five different individuals or groups who felt great pressure to cancel others and they refused to do so. And I think it's time for society to have more of that pushback against that sort of thing.
Oh, I think so too. And if you put the guy back on air, what's going to happen? I mean, who's going to do what? It would blow over. You're making it a bigger deal by making it a bigger deal.
Any takeaways of late, Mark, following the draft and the reaction to it? It's funny, I know a lot of people like to talk about, oh, whatever team it is gets an A-plus in the offseason, and they're going to go 20-0 the next year. The way the Steelers are being talked about nationally, I think it's the Steelers this year, with all the, you know, flowers and rose petals that are being thrown at their feet for the offseason.
Yeah, people act like they've solved all their problems. They haven't. It was a good draft. You know, like, if you say it's a good draft and you don't think that they've solved all their problems, then all the yokels say, well, you think it's a bad draft. No, I think it's a pretty good draft. I just think they need to get more done than one good draft. And like you said, you never know how good a draft is until the guys actually get on the field. A couple things that I know that I'm right about them in my trip column. Colin Coward said the Steelers are sneaky good, but then he ranked them ninth in the AFC. Tim, that is known as damning with accurate praise. And then you had the CBS Sports poll where they ranked the quarterbacks. They ranked Pickett 28th among the league's 32 quarterbacks. And the guy who wrote it said Pickett was much better as a late game battler than he was an efficient, regular, every down quarterback. And that's also damning with accurate praise. That's 100% true.
If he said, Coward I'm talking about here, that they're the ninth best team in the AFC and they're sneaky good, that's one spot back from what they were this past year.
Yeah, but I think that reflects what's going on in the AFC, Tim. The AFC is going to be – you're going to see two or three real good teams not make the playoffs.
I think this is reflective of the conversation we had on one of your podcasts for the Bet Rivers Network, where you and I kind of went through our AFC QB draft. I think I wound up taking Pickett ninth. You had him, what, like right. 11th or something like that? 11th or 12th?
Well, I didn't have to decide, Tim, because you jumped in there ahead of me and took him. I think I would have picked him 11th or 12th in the AFC, yeah.
If you extrapolate that to be very reflective of the team, and you should because quarterback is so very important, that's where I think it's safe to say that the Steelers are still on the playoff bubble despite how good this offseason was. Like, for instance, I know there's a conversation about, you know, Andy Weidel and his influence, and he spoke with us for the first time since he got hired, really. I think training camp was the last time he talked to the media. Mark, as much of a positive influence as Andy Weidel has had on the team, that might be the last time we talk to him, because if these things do work out the way Steelers fans want him to be, he's going to be a GM somewhere else next year.
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe he's really the GM here.
Personnel-wise, fair point.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think if he's the personnel guy here, you know, I think then it would depend on how much somebody else would pay him unless he's real fond of titles. And, Tim, you know how the Steelers do things. They decide as a team.
Mark, did you take care of your first priority for the summer, Aerosmith tickets?
Oh, what a nightmare that was. Yeah, though. I got Pittsburgh, Cleveland, and Columbus right off the bat. Well, not right off the bat, but I got in line early, and I you know, on in the electronic queue, and I got, you know, tickets I'm happy with for all three venues. Although for Cleveland and Columbus, Tim, to get the seats I wanted, I had to buy two for end row. If I can't go end row, I don't want to go.
Are they all indoor venues?
Yeah, yeah. So I bit the bullet. I bought two for those venues, and then MSG just had, you know, as you would figure, you know, the world's most famous arena just had this really lengthy, you know, queue, and I didn't get every ticket that was left when I got in was either absurdly expensive or just, you know, was not what I wanted. So I got a ticket I wanted for Newark instead, December 28th, right day before my birthday. So that'll be fun.
Yeah, easier trip out there too, actually, Newark. But you're not going to drive, right? You're flying anyway?
Flying to Newark, driving Cleveland, Columbus, and of course, Pittsburgh's right down the road, as you know.
As far as your Vegas trip, you're going to try to squeeze in a hockey game.
Game five is Friday night, and I'm free. I'm not sure yet, though, because I spent, Tim, $3,900 for the Aerosmith tickets. And don't get me wrong, I'm not going to regret it. I really want to go.
That's a lot of Mark Madden Caliente pizza appearances, is it not?
It's a lot of something. So I'm not sure if I'm going to go yet. Like, there's some really good places to watch games, like sports books and hockey bars out there.
Yeah.
So I'll decide later in the week. And I don't know why I did this, because I shouldn't have before I go away and eat too much. But today I had a tour of two traditional Pittsburgh food joints. I did Tesoro's for hamburger, still the best hamburger in town in Bloomfield. And then on, I think it's technically Lawrenceville, but maybe it's close to the Strip. There, so I went to Clavon's Ice Cream.
I would call that the Strip, yeah.
Yeah, that's the Strip, and that was excellent as well. So I go from there to places like Binion's Steakhouse and Hash House of Go-Go, where I'll be dining with Sean McDowell and his lovely wife this week.
I did Sullivan's Steakhouse this weekend in Pittsburgh in the Steel Building. Have you been to that yet?
Yeah, that's like kind of a two or three times over remake, right? Different names?
Is it? I don't know what else was in there before that.
There was a place called Red and a place even before that. They were all steakhouse. How was it?
The food was quite good. The service was a little overtaxed. Like, it looked like the staff was not, you know, ready for a Saturday night, like with the show crowd all in place downtown and with the marathon in town too.
Well, Tesoro's was packed like always, but had great service. And Clavon's, it was closing at 7. I got there at 6:45 just to get an ice cream cone, and it was surprisingly dead. I would think in the spring that when places like that open up, you know, there would be a big crowd there, but I probably got there just right before it closed. That was probably a factor. The marathon this weekend, you know, going through those neighborhoods.
Yes, yes.
I don't know if it affected things today, but yesterday for sure.
Oh, yeah, the traffic was gonzo yesterday, especially coming in for the Pirates game. A North Hills grad, Mark, was the winner on the women's side.
I doubt my mom would have taught her, and certainly would not have taught her to run, that's for sure.
Mark Madden, he'll be in for the show on Monday, and then Tom and I take over the rest of the week. Mark will be back with us next week here on the Madden Monday podcast.